Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here for the next hour, and in Studio A, Tom, our engineer.
Oh yeah, that's right. I'm in Studio A, aren't I?
I'm just reading the studio letters today. I had some time to walk through the halls and was trying to get some details down for our show today.
Some very important details, sure.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to give we don't have the web stream yet, so I want to give everyone a very clear description of what it is here. And in case you don't know, me and Tom have to sit between glass. Otherwise, there'd be a lot of fighting and you know, tossing things across the...
It's really for the best.
Yeah, as many things are.
I'm making all these obscene hand gestures on this side, and he can't get to me. It's a perfect situation for me.
Yeah, it keeps the show civil for the hour we have here. The weather is enough to make everyone nuts. Let's take a look at a couple things I want to talk about in the news. This week was a rough week. We had a passing, Don Schwartz. Donald Schwartz was the general manager and president of KMSP-TV for a long time. I want to read his obituary. This was in the Star Tribune on March 19th. And Don is a member of the Minnesota Broadcasting Hall of Fame, too. Don Schwartz took over management of KMSP-TV Channel 9 in 1957 and turned it into one of the most successful independent television stations in the country. Schwartz, described as a quiet programming genius who was classy and well-respected in the industry, died March 15th. The Golden Valley resident, who formerly lived in St. Paul, was 98. We competed with him forever and ever, and he was smart, honest, a man of great integrity, and a real pioneer in television broadcasting, said Stanley S. Hubbard of Hubbard Broadcasting, which includes KSTP, its flagship TV and radio stations. Hubbard had presented Schwartz, then president of KMSP, with the Midwest's first Emmy Award to recognize excellence in television broadcasting. Schwartz was also voted into the Minnesota Broadcasters Hall of Fame. He saw the whole galaxy of electronic media born in his career and was responsible for the midwifing of some of these platforms, said Steve Morverick, president of the Phoenix Media Group, a radio consulting firm. Son of a Willow River storekeeper, Schwartz faced setbacks early in his life. His mother died at age 36 when she was 13. He and his brothers were shuffled around from the region to different families before settling in Minneapolis with their dad, who ran a tobacco stand in the Lumber Exchange building. Don went to West High School. As a young usher at the Ritz Theater, Schwartz fell in love with the entertainment business. He was next hired as an office boy for Warner Brothers and worked his way up. He bought the Loop and Astor movie theaters in downtown Minneapolis. Schwartz also represented independent studios and distributed movies. In 1957, he was working for National Telefilm Associates, NTA, when it joined with the movie producing firm Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, MGM, to buy Channel 9, at the time KMGM-TV. Schwartz, who was also known for cutting costs, was named general manager of the struggling independent station, which became KMSP. In 1975, he told the Star Tribune that many years of struggling taught him that shrewdness may have some merit. He said the station was losing $30,000 a week when he took over in the 1950s.
Oh, my.
That's a lot of money. That's $1.5 million a year, Schwartz had said. It took me a long time to pay up those losses, and I didn't draw any money out of this place for 6 months. KMSP lost the ABC affiliation to KSDP in 1979. The NBC affiliation moved from Channel 5 to 11, now Care TV. Everyone thought Channel 9 was never going to succeed, and it became the number one rated independent television station in the United States, said Son Stewart, who also worked at Channel 9. Schwartz retired in 1983 but continued to do consulting and civic work, which included co-founding a program to help minorities become broadcasters, as well as serving the Minnesota Orchestra and the Minneapolis Art Institute. You have to pay back a community that's been good to you, he liked to say. In 1967, he was named chairman of the Valley Club Heart Hospital, which became University of Minnesota Heart Hospital. He was president of that and the Temple of Aaron Synagogue. Schwartz had been caring for Helen, his wife of 74 years. 74 years, or Tom. Since she fell ill. He recently finished his autobiographical work, Now and Forever, but the accomplishment was bittersweet. My writings are now closed, he wrote. My heart is broken. Mother's illness may not give her the opportunity to read Now and Forever. On March 7th, during Schwartz's 98th birthday party, he had a massive heart attack. In addition to Helen and Stewart, survivors include sons Gary and Larry, 10 grandchildren, and 11 great-grandchildren. Services have been held. Don Schwartz, a pioneer in Twin Cities television, took a struggling Channel 9, and Channel 9 struggled a long time as far as being a respected station in town. Right now, as Fox 9, we wouldn't distinguish it from any different of the network affiliates. But Channel 9, and there's a pretty good essay. If you go to Studio Z on the internet, Jeff Lanta writes a pretty good essay on the history of Channel 9 with a lot of different citations over the years. Their news operation was subpar, they may say, and that was the reason that the network affiliation left. And we played some of that audio a while back on the network switch, which was the equivalent of the HD switch we had here a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
We didn't know what network our stations were on. But I want to play a couple of – with Channel 9 being in third place so long, I want to play a couple of these commercials they aired during that – the lean years. And by the way, it's important to note that Schwartz was making a good profit out of Channel 9. Schwartz was making more profit per dollar of investment than Channel 5 or Channel 4. Now, they may have been – you know, it's the old saying, it does not need to be number one to be profitable.
At Channel 9, we stack the deck in your favor with shows like Happy Days, Donnie and Marie, Beretta, Starsky and Hutch, Mike Douglas, and our own exciting News 9 show featuring Don Harrison and Kathy Mann. We hold the winning hand. That's why more people watch Channel 9 from 9 in the morning till 12 midnight than any other station. KMSP News 9. Keep on watching.
Keep on watching, please. Please keep on watching.
So I'm really curious, how exactly were they losing that much money, I mean, each week?
Well, you know, keep this in mind. In 1957, TV had been around for about 9 years. I don't think the business model of how to make TV profitable had been invented yet.
That is just a substantial loss, though. I mean, maybe a little bit I can understand, but wow.
You know, I mean, when you look in, we can do the calculator later, but think about it, $30,000 in 2014 dollars. It's got to be a lot of money bleeding a week.
Yeah.
You know, and Channel 9 is owned by the movie studio. So Channel 9, they had the bandwidth to take the losses.
Mm-hmm.
But Don Schwartz, and this is what he was known for, and it's amazing into his credit that that with Channel 9 as an independent station, was able to take reruns of movies and make a very profitable, successful station, similar to what WGN in Chicago and WOR did in New York. It took a long time for Schwartz to gain the respect in the industry that he did. Let's play again. I have the station promotion switch, only because I laugh every time I hear this. And this was the big peak in 1979 when all the stations switched their networks, and they did a little interview on the street to see if people knew what the switch was going to be.
WTCN is going to take over Channel 5 and that's our national broadcasting, NBC, right?
KMSP TV is going to go to NBC, and WWTC would it be unaffiliated then, or no, is that
confusing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's very confusing.
It's either ABC is going with CBS, the National Broadcasting Company. They're switching around like that, but I'm not really sure.
I believe that Channel 5's affiliation with NBC is going to Channel 11. No, Channel 9's affiliation with CBK? Is that it? Did I get it right?
Don't be confused. Little House on the Prairie starts Monday, March 5th on the new NBC 11.
Thank you to the choir for singing that song at the end there, right?
See, I would have no idea. I have a hard enough time just knowing what stations are what right now.
With the invention of the internets and DVR and TiVo, do you even know what day things are on anymore?
No, I don't have a clue. In fact, when the WB went away, WB, no, exactly. I didn't know that switched for the longest time. I was living in Japan. I came back, and like, where did it go? What did it become, Tom?
The CW.
The CW, that's right. Now, is that a whole different company that owns it, or did they just change the name?
Paramount and the UPN and the WB merged, and then we became the CW.
Oh.
Oh. Yeah.
Right.
I want to actually, this is from StudioZ.com. I want to just a couple quotes here. And by the way, this is honoring Don Schwartz here, but there's some humorous stories here of the penny pinching in Channel 9 in order to make those profits and stop that bleeding. John Carmen of the Minneapolis Star cited several examples of the station's news failures and penny-pinching attitude toward the news program. It was a local network that did not send a news crew to Cuba. It was one of the
No worries. Are we looking for it right now?
The internet occasionally will do things that...
aren't you glad we're away from a paperless society?
Oh, I am. Okay, here we go. On August 28, 1978, just before the start of the new fall season, it was announced that KSP TV Channel 5 would become an ABC affiliate following March, ending the network's 18-year relationship with KMSP and KSP's 50-year association in radio and television with the National Broadcasting. It was ABC's biggest coup, and the announcement was big in the industry, written about in Newsweek, TV Guide, Business Week, and The Washington Post. KMSP manager Don Schwartz, for his part, claimed to be blindsided. "I had no idea it was coming," he told the St. Paul Pioneer Press. "The network told me about 8 months ago it was interested in getting other stations. That's all I knew about it." As it turned out, the network had made an offer to KSTP as early in the spring of 1977 and had also been in contact with WTCN and WCCO. And the ad is a picture of Fonzie on the motorcycle. Happy Days is moving to Channel 5.
See, that's all you need to know. That's all anybody really cares about, I think. Where can you find Happy Days?
Right now on Channel 99, right?
Oh, geez. Yeah. I was trying to find that stuff for my parents. They wanted to see all of the, like, Me TV and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's channel 17.9 anymore. This is just a confusion for me.
I've sampled the antenna TV now, and I'm noticing that there are about 30 channels now, because every channel has their point 1, 2, 3, and 4 now. There's a number of religion channels, and then there are Me TV. The thing I find amazing is these old shows, whether it be Bonanza or Happy Days or All in the Family, they've restored the original prints. And when we watched these reruns 30 years ago, it was a much rougher 16mm print.
Sure,
now
sure.
We're watching these prints in this digital restoration. It's as if we're watching new programming.
And that just has been made to look like it was aired back then.
And hopefully, Happy Days aside, hopefully some of our younger youth audience will watch these programs and enjoy them the same way.
I'm going to be so sad when people don't know what Gilligan's Island is anymore.
You know, after Russell Johnson passed away, and I've noticed that Gilligan's Island's been on about 4 or 5 times a day.
I
flip the channels twice, every 2 days, and all of a sudden Gilligan's Island's always on. I think there's a channel for Gilligan's Island. I don't think we're ever going to be in that dilemma.
Oh, good.
It's one of those shows that just doesn't go away.
No matter how hard you try.
Let's take a break. We have a surprise guest. Surprise guest today. And we'll take a break and come back with our surprise guest. I know you can't wait. All right.
Woohoo!
Flash by Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond, with our surprise guest. He just walked in, Willie Ketchum.
That's it. You got both words right.
Occasionally we'll do that.
There's an alias in there. Alan Lotsberg.
Oh, yes, that's right, that's right.
Oh, it's funny how all those years is Willie Ketchum on Channel 4, and only once in a while somebody would say, "I know you. You're Alan Lotsberg." And I look around and say, "Oh, that's me," because I was Willie Ketchum for 17 years on Channel 4.
You ended up losing yourself into the name.
Yes, indeed. The name took over, and then they expected jokes and funny pratfalls.
You know, you need to cash in on that. I think when New York and California, they have these very strange elections, and they have everyone from Grandpa Munster to Gary Coleman runs for office. If you put Willie Ketchum on the ballot in Minnesota, you could think of the way you could have cashed in on that. You could have been a corrupt politician.
Excuse me, I have to leave now.
That's right.
That's true. That's absolutely true. But the names that are associated with my style of doing that stuff, first of all, I got to say I spent 50 years in the theater, and I'm almost 40 now, so think about that.
That's right.
You whippersnapper.
Okay. Yeah. Truth be known, I'm 82 this month.
Congratulations.
So if you need an address to send the gift, I mean,
we'll put it on the Facebook page. We'll actually just put a PayPal site up and then
okay.
See, he's got this politics thing down already. He only wants people to send him money.
But it, back in those days, it was the names that were so big on television back in the 50s mm-hmm. and 60s was John Gallis as Clancy, a mm-hmm. lovely man, and I was Willie Ketchum. So he and I were pairs on Channel 4, and we did that for, I think, 17 years. And before that was Commodore Cappy, and John Gallis was everything you can imagine. And then there was also Carmen the Nurse and with Axel. And on other stations, it was
Captain 11.
Yeah, right. Very good. How
Casey
old
Jones.
Are you?
If I give that away, it takes the whole illusion of the show away.
I'm talking to a teenager here.
He's 15.
15, yeah.
It's impressive, isn't it?
15 and 40. I got it. Okay.
Yeah, somewhere between 15 and 1,000. But we'll put it there.
But those days, it was all Casey Jones and Ron S. Rodney. And all those youth people, you know, it was a big deal to be. There's only one left, I think, now, besides me, and I got about 2 weeks left here.
Oh, wow.
But
I had you on. I booked you early.
Darl Lobb is still around.
Oh, that's right.
T.N. Tatters and Captain Something. And I see him every once in a while. So.
And, you know, and unfortunately, and I feel like we're on the death show today, but everyone kind of left us at the same time. Everyone was because they were doing shows at the Heights Theater, and then everyone was gone.
Suddenly gone, and there's not much of that anymore. So, I guess those days of television. Your previous guest was talking about green stamps and all that stuff way mm-hmm. back. That's my era.
Do you have yours still?
Oh yeah, I still have my.
What are you saving up for?
I need a coffee pot.
Really? Mr. Coffee?
Yeah, Mr. Coffee. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you are older than you look.
Have you ever heard the Alan Sherman song about green stamps?
Oh, yes.
You have?
Yes.
Excellent.
I had the album, and there were so many great things in there. Hello, Mother. Hello, Father. Here we are at Camp Granada. Just jump in whenever you want.
Camp Granada.
Hey, two questions. Before I want to play some audio here, but first of all, we're talking about sending you money, yes. which we're not going to do. But wasn't it Soupy Sales the one that told all the kids to send him money? To
yes.
And that then he got a little trouble for that.
Yes, he did. And here's the address to send to kids. Yeah. By the way, go in and tell your grandmother, whoever's asleep in the other room, that you're just playing.
Oh,
kid,
sure, right, yeah.
And he got into some deep trouble
Are
with that.
Are you serious? Did that happen?
It was a true thing. And it occurred to me to try it, you know. I thought, well, go
you
in
got,
get some.
Yeah, you had to be tempted.
Oh, yeah.
Just a little bit.
You know, find the wallet by your grandpa's bureau desk there and just mail it to here at Willie Ketchum at WCCO Television. I never did that, of course. It occurred to me.
Oh, no, but the parents must have caught on to that pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. And then the kids were found in the river, as I recall. I made that
Bob?
You know, bobbing.
After, you know, 25 years after Clancy and Willie went off the air, I guess today Alan Motzberger, or Willie Ketchum if you prefer.
Either way.
You made an appearance on Captain McCool. This is an appearance from 2001. I want to play just a little audio from this, Tom.
This, of course, is Willie Ketchum, mm-hmm. and he was in the Clancy and Willie show. And I grew up with Clancy and Willie, and I think we have a clip of you and Vivian.
Oh, yes, I know that. You're going to meet Vivian,
right.
You're going to meet Clancy, and Willie Ketchum is in this shot, and also Auntie Ketchum.
Auntie Ketchum, good old Auntie Ketchum,
old
yes.
My old fuddy-duddy auntie. She's just, and by the way, something very strange happens at the end of this little episode, so stay tuned.
Ooh, okay, ooh. All right, roll them.
Hi. We've had a mysterious disappearance from our detective agency this morning. Gee, I better discuss it with my private secretary, Vivian Vulture. She lives behind this portrait of our founder, Sherlock Groans. Oh, I hope Vivian can help me.
Hi, Clarence.
Vivi, you remember that box of TNT powder that we keep back in the clues closet?
Yes, what about it?
It's gone. Disappeared.
Disappeared?
Yes.
Clarence, do you realize that that stuff gets into the wrong hands? Why, it could blow this agency to kingdom.
Well, Viv, if you haven't seen that box of TNT powder, I wonder whether Willie Ketchum or Auntie Ketchum have seen it.
Well, gee, I don't know, Clarence. The last time I saw him, they were back in the laboratory.
I'll go back and check with them right away.
Okay, good luck.
Clarence, I found it.
Found what?
I found the TNT powder container.
Oh, great, where'd you find it?
Oh, back there where Auntie was making her cake.
Oh, Willie, look out. This is dangerous. Somebody could get hurt.
No, Clarence, there's no problem. It's empty.
empty.
And there you go. Clip of a clip within a clip.
This got really meta right here.
You know,
that's why. You know, I see this and I think back of all the voices I did. That Willie Ketchum. No, that was Vivian Vulture.
So you did the puppeteering in that
I
show.
Did the puppet. Yeah, I did that too.
Okay, now that is the one part that does give me a little bit of nightmares. The puppets do give me a little nightmare. I mean,
I know it.
Clowns and puppets do scare me still.
That's true. People would say, "Well, how can you do a close up of that witch when it's going? Where you been?" And all that, and it would scare the kids. And I said, "Well, let them be scared." But we were very cautious about that, and no blue language. That wasn't, you know, you get away with that here.
Was this all live every day?
Not every day, but let me go through the phases, will you?
Sure.
It was black and white, live, Gallus and me, John Gallus, lovely John Gallus. Then we went to live color. Then we went to videotape. Black and white, and then videotape color. All those phases. We were pioneers of television.
So you went from color to black and white. It's very unusual for television to go from color programming to black and white.
I know. I may have the sequence goofed, but that was and I have Andy Ketchum on there. And Harry Jones, our producer, he was unaware that I had this dress, big fluffy dress in the back with things sticking out all over it. And so I just went back and put on the dress, and then John Gallus was in on it, and he said, "Oh, here comes Auntie Ketchum." And I came on, "Well, hello there, Auntie. Well, Clanky, how are you today? Nice to see you, Clanky." I called him Clanky. And Harry Jones, our producer, just went, I thought he was going to fall through the window like we're looking at you. He said, "Where did you get that dress? What's he doing? Get him out of there." And I suddenly got amusing, and the floor crew was howling. That's no way to judge it. But
well, you know, last time we had you here, you were explaining to us your youthful indiscretions of stealing jeans and pants from local merchants. And so how did you be able to come? And I'm joking. How are you able to come through all that? And how did you get this role? You've been in theater your whole life. How did this role come about?
I worked in the promotion department for Tom Cousins. He's still around. He's just a lovely guy. And one day, Harry Jones called Tom Cousins down the promotion department, and I typed promos for on-air promos for Dean Montgomery. There's a name mm-hmm. that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He was his real name. He and I were pals, and his real name, his part Indian, his real name was Proudfoot, and not Montgomery. So one time, I was always palling with Dean Montgomery, and the promotion department said, "He wants to talk to you." And I said, "Well, where is he?" "Up in Studio 4. He's on the air." And I said, "Do I have to talk on the air? I better put on my bass voice here." And so I went up there, and Dean Montgomery was there, and we clowned around a little bit. And then suddenly they said, "Tom Cousins, why don't you send Alan up here and see if he wants to do a puppet?" And it was live, and I said, "Sure." So I slipped on this puppet. "That sounds like this." Made up a voice. And I said, "You got three choices on the voice here." This is off camera. "You can either do, this is Vivian Vulture." And then I thought, "Here's the other choice. Oh, that's Vivian Vulture." The third choice is Vivian Vulture. So with all that variety, so they said, "That's the one." And then I just went on the air. And so that's how it became. My promotion director, Tom Cousins, got me up there with a puppet. And suddenly Harry Jones says, "You're on the air with a puppet." I did that for 3 or 4 days. And then Harry Jones said, "Let's do this. Maybe you can be a character on this thing." And he said, "You do a lot of theater, don't you?" "Yeah, well, that's all." I said, "Well, let's do it. But where's the script?" He said, "Script? What is that?" "And that's a piece of paper with words on it, and you read it, and you say it, and learn it." "No, no, this is all ad lib, now known as improv." And so I said, I "What do I say?" "Whatever occurs to you." I said, "What if I'm thinking of a dirty joke?" "No, you can't. No, file that."
It'd be dangerous.
It was just weird. So after a while, Gallus was very good at it. You know, he's just, "Hi, kids, and here's a short, dumb guy." And he came out, and so I made up something. I don't know what it was. And then suddenly it was easy to do, and I thought, that's improvisation.
Did you think that this will, and you did this for 17 years, this role,
yeah.
And did you think that, I know that, you know, talking to Roger Ashbaum, who was Casey Jones,
yes.
he thought it never would end. And I know when it ended, it was hard on these guys who thought that they had done something very important in television. It ended, and they never quite knew how to move beyond that. And
yeah.
And was that tough to be giving so much, so many hours, so much energy to a show every day and then to be done?
Yes, it's called typecasting. You get to a point where you're known for Willie Ketchum. There's nothing else you can do. Mm-hmm. And when Roger Rawson is Casey Jones. And
so Weekend Weather and News wasn't in for your Channel 4 after Willie Ketchum was done.
Never. It was all. And the good news is that once John Gallis was no longer involved, Mary Davies was no longer involved, then they had an audition for all three of us and said, well, we're going to use one of you. Two of you have to go. But they're just cutting back on time on the air and wages. And so I think it was I hate to say this about management and television, but
we can. We're at radio. We're a locally owned radio station. We can say anything we want to about
oh, boy, did you hear the joke about the guy? Who No, never mind. So here was – I said, well, how are you going to do this? And he said, I'll just have auditions. And I said, audition? Mary Davies has been doing this for 22 years. John Gallis has been doing this for, I don't know, 25 years, and I've been doing this for about 6 or 7 years. And you're going to have an audition to see which one gets a solo show and drop the other two. And they did. They held auditions, and that all three of us went nuts on that. It was later when it was found out, I said, I got the nod. They got to go. Mm-hmm. And they said, the reason was your daughter Amy was only about 4 years old at the time. So if you got a youngster at home, you think like a child and you can be better on the air. Mm-hmm. And so I've always thanked my daughter Amy for getting me this part on a show. It was a dumb way to do it way back in those days. I don't know when that would be, 1970 maybe or so.
Our guest today, Alan Lotsberg, has there ever been a time on TV they weren't cutting back budget? It feels like that's the thing that we've been hearing about for 50 years, always budgets being cut. Budgets are never being expanded. You ever hear someone saying, you know what, we got a lot of money, we need to spend it. How can we spend more money
not
today?
Not unless you're in construction. Yeah. Just kidding.
But that's it, the power of money. Mm-hmm. Why can't we have all three of us on the air where there's no budget anymore? All you have to say is no budget, and people say, well, can they buy that?
Yeah, with those three stations, they were really hurting for ratings at that point, right?
Yes.
They were suffering. I mean, those guys were, the management was coming home hungry.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seems like once you're in there and you get caught up in it and the money's coming in, and mm-hmm. it's not much, by the way.
Right.
I don't remember what they paid me per week when I first started on the air live. It was, I think, I don't know, $50 a week or something.
And you know, our good friend Brad Kraling, he showed me his contract, his first TV contract. I think it's about $17 a week he was receiving for. Not even being funny. I think that's
Is that before taxes or?
Oh, that's after taxes, obviously. I mean, so you multiply that by $30,000. Now as much Channel 9 is losing a week because they didn't have Willie Ketchum on the air. That's.
That's always amazed me how they got away with that. And so when I won the audition, the others two took a walk. That was just painful for me because, well, you got it. Okay. And then I thought they were going to slash my tires.
Did they hold it against you?
The what?
Did they hold it against you?
Wrong? No. Personally, they were just very sweet about the whole thing. But we all had a conspiracy to go up and kill all the people in management. So, no, but then we didn't do that. And it was just a strange time.
And John Gallis, I mean, he's, you know, he hosts the religion program, the longest running religious programming
yes.
on local TV for 25 years.
Like, yes.
I can't see John out there slashing your tires.
But he was so proud of that. So the kids show for him was secondary, mm-hmm. and it was an amazing program he did. It was Sunday mornings, I think.
John Glau- right.
For 36 years or something mm-hmm. like that. It was
and he
longest.
Did announcing. He did everything on Channel 4.
Oh, he did everything. He was never very good at, you know, character stuff, but mm-hmm. Weather, news, reports on, but I'm starting to stumble around here. I'm falling asleep. Is it you that's causing me to go to sleep?
I'm a little dull today. I understand that. I didn't wear my Saturday fun day hat, so it's not.
I did miss your Saturday fun hat.
But you
it's
guys in this era of TV, you guys did everything. You were doing movie shows on weekend nights. You were
yes.
doing kid shows. You were doing voiceovers. You guys did everything.
Everything. And that was, if you did one thing, they would try you on something else. And if you didn't bomb, they'd keep you on it. For instance, I was one time I got a call. I was on an appearance somewhere, and the station manager called and said, we're thinking about having somebody who really likes movies, and your name came up. I said, I've been involved in movies and fascinated by Hollywood and film and all that all my life. We're going to do a Friday night, a comedy and classics, we're calling it. What's that? And it's movies that are comedies and those that are classics. And will you know? I said, if I don't know them, I'll watch them and learn. And I used to screen the film, sit in the studio and watch, and then find the promo to lift out of the film to run on the air for the forthcoming week. And I realized that I'm a movie buff, especially the old ones. You know, I was once told somebody I'm an old movie buff. That doesn't mean there's no clothes on. I think.
Well, that there's. I watched the tape actually because I did come to a collection of someone to tape those movies. Unfortunately, they kept pausing the recorder when you came on. So I got a few scenes, not many. But no, you the Marx Brothers movies and the Three Stooges, you know, the movies of that era, which the local stations were able to get very cheaply,
yes,
and put out there, and then you were able to give a little bit of commentary, a little bit of the bridges, they would call
the bridges, yes. And the nice part of that was that because I was known for that in the Twin Cities Comedy and Classics, and if I had a live guest on the air, mm-hmm. I could promo that for the forthcoming week, and the ratings would go way up. I interviewed with so many people. You might have heard of Gregory Peck.
Yeah, he comes to mind.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That one.
Hello. Absolutely.
But he and I can't think of him now, but there must be 50, 60 of them, big stars from that period, including Pat O'Brien. Nobody remembers Pat O'Brien. And
was he the host of Extra?
No.
That's a different one.
Different one. But it was so fun because I had a reputation for that. And Harry Jones, our producer, would say, oh, we got somebody coming to town, and all these big stars would come into town, and I'd sit and interview these people. And
like Bob Crane.
And Bob Crane.
Yeah, that's a video we unearthed recently, you and Bob Crane.
Yes. There's another Bob on, I forget these names, but anyway, way back early television as well as movies. And when they'd come to town for whatever, they'd get them into Studio 4 and I'd interview them. And that was always great fun. I just loved it. Once there was a tall guy, real tall. He had meat.
Ted Cassidy.
Whatever it was. I was sitting in the studio with him, and I wish my wife was here. She could. Jackie, what's the name?
You know what? Let's take a break, Tom. We'll take a quick break here in Flash for Twin Cities. Maybe you can ask Jackie what that guy was.
All
and we'll come
right
back with the tall guy that Alan Lotsberg, Willie Ketchum, had an interview and was so intimidated that he can't remember his name to this day. Right back on KLTV Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with Alan Lotsberg and many other aliases.
That's me.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's you. And we had to go to the pop culture expert to figure out who that person was that you were just intimidated by his tall
yes.
stature. And that was
Jimmy Dean.
Jimmy Dean.
Most people say, oh, the sausage guy. Because Jimmy Dean Meats was a very big deal. And that's why he was in town at that time. I don't mm-hmm. know when, maybe the 70s. But it's just a charming guy, and so I'm sitting there with him, and he had a couple shows on the air. And what's a big song he had, Jackie?
Big Bad John.
And so we were sitting side by side, and the camera came, stand by, give me the cue. And I said, I want to just test something here. A lot of people think I'm tall, because all you ever see is from the waist up on television.
Oh, sure.
Stand up, Jimmy, will you? And he did, and I did too. And I said, which one is taller? And as he went up, he bashed his head on the boom mic, which was over his head. Kapow, you know, literally sounded like a rifle shot. I thought I'd been hit by something, and he said, I think I'll sit down. And he did before he fell.
It's a problem you and I don't have, you know, this whole
right.
thing. I'm just watching your video here, and, you know, us two, we walked in here today. You know, we get some.
Together, we're 4.5 feet, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah. More like 4.75, you know, but
okay.
It's, you know,
exactly.
That's neither here nor there.
The guy who's the engineer looking at us over here, he's not much taller than you.
I am a solid 5 foot nothing.
Look at that.
Maybe a little taller than that, but
I think I'm 5'5". What am I, honey?
5'6".
5' what?
6.
5'6".
Good
right,
enough. So I have you beat by about 2 inches. That's it. We are not a tall group of people in this
I guess not.
Place here today.
In your post-TV career, you did something which I think is just fantastic, the Fogey Follies, and then the new Fogey
yes.
Follies, and you did that for how many years?
Oh, 17. 17 years on that, and that was based on the previous 40 years on stage at Chaness and Dinner Theater, Bloomington Civic Theater, and the Round, you name it, and I did it. And I just loved it. And for some reason, I always got chosen. I don't know. I could sing a little and dance a little. None of it very well. So I was kind of always in there. And so,
talent all relative.
Yeah. glad I knew the directors all the time. So that was great fun to do that. And I think one time I went to – I measured out on 10-year basis or something.
That's a good story.
How much?
The story you told me before, yeah.
I thought I'm having a deja vu. I did tell you this before. After, I think, 10 years in the air, I looked at how many days I'd not been in a show. Not been in a show. And I think there was 10 or 12 days in 10-year period when I was not in a show. I was addicted. I couldn't get away from it. I just loved it.
I mean, is there a moment of relaxation now, though, when you're not – because, you know, we did a show a few weeks ago, a live show, and I know that afterward I was so happy to be able to come home and just, you know, because you're trying to do the best – live,
yes,
performance, and you can rehearse all you want until you get out there and the mics are on, the lights are there. You know, anything could happen. You could cough, you could choke.
Right. Pants fall off.
Well, that's been known to happen. Every Saturday here, you know, I could start having a coughing fit. And when it's done, it's got to give you some relaxation, but you sound like you just wanted to get back up and do a show right away again, or did you start your next show before the first one is even done?
That is true. I'm doing one, and I would know that there's a show being done over here, hopefully at the same theater, and while I'm doing one, I auditioned for another, so there were end to end. That's a little music thing there.
Sure.
But I was just so addicted, I couldn't stay away from it, and I loved it. And I don't know if it was the joy of doing it or the plaudits that go with it, but I was hooked and still am. Now I have an excuse now. I have a short-term memory problem, so I don't have to learn lines because I can't. So I don't audition anymore.
Well, Brando never did either. He had cue cards, you know, right on the table.
Who is this?
Marlon Brando. He never learned lines either.
Right.
He was the greatest living actor.
Well, yeah, same with Dragnet and everything like that. So, hey, you can do cue cards. No problem.
Sure.
Though I did have somebody holding up cue cards in Studio 4, because on Studio 4 I would do Midday, which was a show at noon. Bill Carlson would be on vacation, and they'd bring me in and be the host of that. And that's where I met Jimmy Dean and a bunch of others, Gregory Peck included. And so that was fun to do that, but sometimes I'd need cue cards for the promos.
So there's more theater left. We've not seen the last of you on stage, right? There's more coming up.
Out of me?
Mm-hmm.
You think so?
I think so.
Thank you. You hear that, Jackie? So here you mentioned You mentioned something.
I mentioned a lot of things. We talked about Willie Ketchum. Willie Ketchum, does he come back every once in a while? I know he's come back a couple times in full costume. He's made an appearance.
Yes, he still does that, and I get a kick out of that. I'm in the wings. I'm standing there. I don't know a soul. They don't know me, and they don't care. I put on the hat and the Willie Ketchum coat, and I start, I know who you are. And then they say Roundhouse Rodney. That bugs me.
But that's the one thing that just gets too far.
The sidekick rivalry is still to this day.
Yeah. Still there. But I just love doing live things, and there's some, when you know you're not being taped and this is what you say here can't be taken back, as you know now about live radio, it's just a joy. The adrenaline is high, like right now I'm sweating all over you.
And do you still get people to come up to you and say, didn't you used to be Willie Ketchum? Didn't you used to be Al Motzberg? Or as you say, mostly Willie Ketchum.
Yeah. I get a little of each, mainly Willie Ketchum, by the way. But a lot of people remember Comedy and Classics, where for 5 years I was a host of old films. And that's when I got a lot of old actors as guests coming through town and interviewing them live on the air, and that was just great.
In the heyday, were you going to a lot of schools, too, and visiting a lot of children after the show, and you'd be doing...
Yes, yeah. It would be riding in parades and making appearances at the fairground and here and there and everywhere.
So you probably get a lot of stories from adults now saying, I remember you came to my school and you talked to me, and here's the autograph you gave me a few years ago.
Bleep, bleep, years ago. And then I look at it, and it'll say Roundhouse Rodney, and I'll say, wrong.
We got to let it go.
By the way, I got to tell you, those two guys, I'm looking at one on your screen here, Roundhouse Rodney and Casey Jones. Those two guys were just, Darryl Lobb is his real name, and just wonderful guys. And I was, it was kind of fun that Casey, Roundhouse Rodney would get mixed up with me, too. So he'd say, I had two people today come up to me and say, aren't you Willie Ketchum? He said, you'll find the bodies in the river. And I said, you shouldn't do that.
Well, in all fairness, your show did last longer than their show. I mean, your show was on a few years longer, and then I recall the show that replaced it was this guy named Phil Donahue, and that was the show that replaced it with, unfortunately.
Yes.
And then, you know, look where Donahue is today. So, see, everything comes and goes.
Yeah, it's and the days of early television with kids and all that, and Auntie Ketchum and Willie, that's all past.
I mean, I never thought that Bozo would be off the air, but in my adult lifetime, Bozo went off the air. WGN, that was a staple of Chicago TV for
He was the beginning, that guy. I've forgotten his name now, but locally it was...
Roger Erickson did Bozo here, and then Bob Bell did in Chicago.
What's his name?
Bob Bell did it in Chicago.
Yes, yes.
And then Joey D'Ara did it after he did. Jeez. So when that went off the air, because they went on 3 hours a day, and pretty soon went down to like a half hour a day, then it was on once a week, and then it was gone.
Then it was never a week.
You know, and they had a live audience. I mean, reading up on this when they canceled the show, there was still like a year's waiting list for kids that brought a postcard in to be on the Bozo show.
Yes. And it was that way with Bozo here, with Roger Erickson. But there was a woman up in the production department who would take reservations and then tell them when their name came up, like you just said. And there was the same thing for the local guy here, Roger Erickson, doing Bozo the Clown.
Hey, in our last segment here, I want to make sure we talk about this. Mary Davies, she passed away last month, and it was very little coverage in the local media on it. And, you know, Alan Lotsberg, our guest today, as someone who worked with her so closely, so long, and knew her for many, many years, give us some memories on Mary Davies, who played Carmen.
Nurse Carmen, well, one of the things that she liked to tell, and I don't think it came out in any of the PR that was about her when she passed away, but I think I was in the studio to say, unless I've told her so many times, I think I was there, that Harry Jones was standing there talking to Mary, and he said, I could use you on the air. Maybe you could be a nurse. And she said, what would I wear? And he said, I don't know. Let's look at this white piece of paper. He took it and folded it in half the long way, bent it a little, put it on her head and said, that's it. You're Nurse Carmen. She said, how does it stay on there? He said, here's a stapler. No, he didn't do that. But she put that paper on her head, and that was her costume. Later, they expanded the budget so she could wear a white dress. But here, that became Nurse Carmen. She likes Nurse Carmen, by the way, not Carmen the nurse. But she was just so sweet, and then all that talent. She could sing so well. She was quick-minded. And when she come out, the kids were just, oh. For us, there's the dork. You know, that'd be fine. But with Mary, it was, here she comes. She's going to sing for us.
And would you like to hear a little bit of Nurse Carmen singing?
Oh, God.
I can do that for you right here.
Do you want a friend who's faithful? Do you want a friend who's true? Do you want a friend to tell your secrets and your troubles too? I look out from my window and I see the finest friends that there could ever be. Be a friend to a dog, and his tail will start wagging every time he sees you walk down the street. Be a friend.
And for all the events around her passing, that song never came up, and that was the one that she was so famous for. I think that was way back with, I forgot the band leader now, but that Be a Friend was on her album.
And for someone so talented, and you talked a little bit about after the TV days were done of being typecast into that role, but did she ever resent that when this was done and she was known, I mean, she had all this talent, but she was known as Nurse Carmen.
Yeah.
Do you think that she was she okay with that? Or do you think that she, you know, thought that, I have this talent and this is what I'm going to be remembered for by?
Yeah, I think she went through some of that. We all do. I thought I was the world's greatest actor, and they got me out doing
kid stuff.
Yeah, but here, Mary with this wonderful voice, and rarely got to use it, and it was a waste of talent. And it was management who said, we don't have time for that. That's too adult, that's too hip, too whatever. And so stay dorky and gooky and walk around the set and walk into pieces and be condemned by Axel or... So she was a little put off by that, and at her service she sang. Did we do this already? She sang what?
Those were
the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. And there was a nice giant screen with a video of her singing that, and we could just hear people sniffling around at the room.
It's so unfortunate. And Neil Justin did a great piece in the Star Tribune. You actually can see it on StarTribune.com on Mary's passing on February 10th at age 88, which is it's a long, wonderful life.
Wow, I guess so.
And you mentioned to me, like, was management were they intrusive in the way you did your programming? Were they constrictive in how you did your shows? Because you mentioned that, you know, this would have been a great thing for her to do more singing on the show, but they were concerned that's too adult.
Yeah.
I think about shows like Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers that was able to blend that, you know,
yes,
sophisticated entertainment along with education, and they were very successful at it.
Yep. I don't know why that was such a taboo at the station, but it was all silly, frowning, pratfalls, and pants drops, and all that.
Because you guys aren't clowns. You guys are we're in theater and music, and it's such multidimensional talents. And, I mean, I look even the two people I knew that did Bozo, Joey Dar and Bob Bell. They had great comedic talents, and it's constricted by what management tells you is what the kids want to see and hear.
Yeah, that's when management was get out of the way and let us do this. But they would not relent. They were just amazing. How, be dorky dumb, otherwise it ain't working. And once in a while, I hope I haven't said this before, but at Dayton's, the Dayton's department store, mm-hmm. every Easter they'd have us, Mary Davies and me, doing the two bunnies, Easter bunnies. Mm-hmm. And we'd sing songs together. And I didn't mind doing that because to sing with civilian clothes on in front of a live audience with Mary would be the kiss of death for me. Mm-hmm. I'd rather, barf in a bag. But we get on these dorky costumes, we run up there, and then I'm covered by a rabbit suit. Well, mm-hmm. then I could sing with her. And we mm-hmm. did that for many, many years. And she was always, I felt so proud singing a song next to Mary Davies. What am I doing up here?
Well, I'm sorry for your loss. I know that you two were very close for many years. And she occasionally made appearances with Willie Ketchum in the after years of the program. I know that when CCO had their 50th anniversary, she came back and with all you guys and did some appearances at PV Plaza, which was fun.
Oh, and we also were up at the Heights Theater up in
North Minneapolis.
And that was great fun. It was Hey Kids. And while we were doing that one, it was through the Pavic Museum of Broadcasting. Mm-hmm. They did it. And so while we were doing that, we were even halfway through the one time we were doing it, and the Pavic Museum, Stan, the director mm-hmm. of the Pavic Museum.
Oh, Steve Raynor.
Steve Raynor.
Yeah.
He came up behind me, and I went into the wings to take a drink of water or something. He says, guess what? We're booking it for, a month from today. So announce it here to this live audience so they'll be back. And I did, and everybody went, wahoo, because we're going to do it again. And we did. We did two of those and sold out.
And you know what the sad thing is on this is there's so little of this video and film that exists. You did it for so many years, and there's so little material that exists.
Yeah, there's a reason for that, and I hate to say it, but at that time, they thought, well, this is only a little whim. It'll be gone in weeks. And they would take yesterday's show and put it in the video recorder. Mm-hmm. So it was always replacing, erasing, and making a show at the same time. And people always say, well, where do you put these? You must have a giant storeroom for these. I've got 12 or 14 minutes max of all of our Clancy and Willie shows.
It's unfortunate. And I know that I'm sure you get a lot of questions. I get questions through TC Media now. I need more. I want more Clancy Willie. I want more. Like, I wish I could give you more. I wish I had a library like I could pull one out. Bowling for Dollars, I get so many questions of Bowling for Dollars for more episodes.
Yep.
And it's the same thing. They recorded one off the last tape.
Right.
And people will say, I want the episode from 1974, this date, and this happened.
So do I.
Yeah, I do too. Great. When you find it, let me know. But but there are video clips that do exist. All 14 minutes of it is on the web. It's the Heights Theater has shown some of it at the Hey Kids events, and thanks to you, there might be some on tcmedianow.com.
Yeah. Well, I wish I had those too. If I could have had them, I would have. We could have duplicated them and sold them. We could have been independently wealthy.
Well, see, then management would want their cut.
They just did not understand how important nostalgia is.
Does Alan or Willie have any messages for the kids listening in out there?
Yes. And don't forget it.
There you go. Hey, it's been great having you on air again. We'll do it again. When your next show comes out, we'll have you promote it again.
Terrific.
And maybe it'll be a show with you in the park, but we'll still have you come promote
it. Thanks, Tom.
Flash at Twin Cities, Tom Osmond. We'll be back next week with another assorted guest and fun for all on KLV Club 1220.